Good morning, everybody. This is Pete with Home Matter, Chi Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's news and Seattle's talk. We've got a really good show for you guys today. We have a new company that's on here. Very interesting. They're working with self-management care programs and things like that. The name of the company is Canary Health, and we have to Dr. Neil Kaufman with us here. How you doing, Neil?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing fantastic. Got good weather up here early in the morning, and
it's perfect.
Summertime. Can't beat it in Seattle. Makes us all feel better. Well, let's dive right in. Neil, I want to talk to you a little bit about, maybe just start with, because maybe people haven't heard about you. It looked like from looking at your website and LinkedIn and things like that, you guys have been around a little over 3 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we formed my second company about 3 years and a few months ago.
Okay.
That really is looking at how to help individuals with chronic illness manage their lives, manage their relationships, manage their emotions, so they're better able to manage their disease. And it's been an exciting run. First company I founded was in 2004 that looked at the prevention of diabetes, and now we've expanded into a range of other chronic conditions, including diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, arthritis, and the like.
That's very, very interesting. And it looked like I was looking at your LinkedIn profile. It looks like you've been a professor as well for quite a few years.
Yeah, I'm proud to say I'm almost 69 years old. I've been working in Los Angeles since the mid-70s.
Wow.
As a faculty member at UCLA, both the School of Medicine and the School of Public Health, being involved in a range of different programs that both as a medical doctor, as a medical director of one or more clinics, community-based or hospital-based, but also as what's called a public health professional, looking at how do you identify a vulnerable population, identify what are their needs, what can they do to help them to improve their outcomes, and then use both public health approaches, so to speak, make the healthy choice the easy choice through policy change, but really looking also at how do you empower individuals, how do you help them to take better control of their lives, of their relationships. And the way to think of it is really how do you help people get the health they need for the life they want. And when I say health they need, if you're 75 years old, the health you need is very different, perhaps, than if you're 25 years old. At 75, maybe I want to pick up my grandchild. Maybe I want to play golf, whatever it might be. I might want to work. But if you're a younger person, you might have a very different activity or need. So we're really all about helping individuals understand how health contributes to their ability to have the life that they want.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, before we get into maybe defining some of these other key chronic health conditions that are facing adults in Washington, because there's quite a few, what was your big aha? I mean, why did you decide one day to say, you know what, I want to start a company, and it ended up being called Canary Health?
The internet bursted out into the world and was in the early 2000s, not very sophisticated. So imagine it's only 15, 20 years ago,
yeah.
But e-commerce really wasn't there to a large degree. Perhaps, say, porn might have been there, but in most other places it wasn't. And it was clear to me that there was a major challenge in healthcare delivery,
mm-hmm.
that we were trying to have an impact at a large population level, but that we were using approaches that could only help a limited number of people. And the way you think about it is that we've got evidence of 30 or 40 years worth of work that tells us how to help individuals have the health they need for the life they want, how to help them to manage their own lives, manage their relationships, manage their emotions, and manage their disease. And that's been done through lots of different researchers over many, many decades. And it's exciting. And a fair number of people, hundreds of thousands or millions perhaps, have benefited. But when you've got epidemics of obesity, of type 2 diabetes, of cardiovascular disease, you can't be thinking of hundreds of thousands. You have to be thinking of tens of millions. And the aha moment was, could I take an evidence-based program that I know works in person, that's got a master clinician providing support one-on-one or maybe in a group, and transform that intervention, that wonderful program, to deliver it in a different format, being faithful to what we know works with the kinds of the people who we're trying to help, in a way that you can go to tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, someday millions. And the internet has that capacity. We've seen over the last decade and a half outside of healthcare that the expansion of the kinds of activities to millions and tens of millions of people is possible. So why isn't it possible in healthcare or in improving health? And it really is. And so the aha moment was, can we use the internet as a way to go for a single clinician to help very, very large numbers of people one at a time? Because you're providing them with a personal health service, with something that helps them manage their life, manage their disease, but you're doing it at scale. And that's the dream of these kinds of approaches.
Right. Makes a lot of sense. And we'll talk more about that, Dr. Kaufman, in the virtual aspect. And, you know, how do you actually get these people to follow these programs? Because that's a big challenge across the board with everything virtual. But before we do that, I do want, you mentioned obesity, you mentioned diabetes. What other chronic conditions do you guys help individuals with, and especially individuals maybe here in Washington State?
So Washington's actually, the inhabitants of Washington are a pretty healthy bunch compared to other parts of the country. The physical activity levels, the healthy eating levels are the smoking, non-smoking, I guess would be the other way of saying it, are in good shape or compared to others. However, as you age, 40, 50, 60, 70, the unfortunate, inevitable activity at some point, unfortunately, we're all going to die, but we're going to die from something, and most of us are going to die from one or more chronic conditions. And they typically focus around a range of risk factors, some of which are environmental and some of which are behavioral, that make you more at risk for example, cardiovascular disease. That's typically the number one killer, whether it comes from people with diabetes or without diabetes, but cardiovascular disease, obesity-related comorbidities, which includes arthritis, includes low back pain, it includes diabetes, includes cardiovascular disease. Still, there are smoking-related challenges. If you look in people over 60 or 70, the smoking rate during their young age was still very high, and so they have a significant amount of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and asthma. Obviously, cancer is a major killer, and it's become a chronic illness in many cases, cancer, HIV, AIDS, where rather than dying right away, the good news is that modern medicine has been able to treat these individuals, but they end up with a chronic illness or one or more chronic illnesses. Mm-hmm. And when you really delve deeper into the question, what you find out is that most people with one chronic disease have two or more others. So, for example, if you're over 65 and you have diabetes, two-thirds of you have more than three other chronic conditions, because they come in a constellation. So you have diabetes, and you've got high blood pressure, yeah, and you've got arthritis, and you've got low back pain, and you've got sleep apnea, all of which come as comorbid states, is what it's called, as conditions with it.
Well, you know, when we come back, we're going to talk all about that. Boy, oh boy, again, stack it up against you here. But we'll talk about the social determinants of health and kind of what does that mean. I also want to ask a couple questions about some of the weight gain and obesity on arthritis and cardiovascular disease. I think probably Dr. Kaufman has some interesting information for you there. With that on, Pete, this is Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's News and Seattle's Talk. All right, we are back. This is Pete with Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's News and Seattle's Talk. We're having a good discussion here with Dr. Neil Kaufman. He is from Canary Health. Guys, if you want to, I'm going to give you this again, so make sure you get a paper and a pencil. You can write this down. But if this is something where you have, self-management care or a chronic disease, at the very least, I mean, you can do a couple things. Number one, you can go to canaryhealth.com. That's C-A-N-A-R-Y and then health.com. Or Dr. Kaufman was gracious enough to give us his email address. You can email him with your questions, and that would be N as in Nancy, and then Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N at canaryhealth.com. And you'll respond back then, Dr. Kaufman, correct?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, sounds good. Let's, one of the things that popped in my head from our last segment, you're talking about, the whole obesity and things like that, and, some of the chronic conditions related to, cardiac health and things like that. Is there a particular weight or weight gain that causes more of a chronic cardiovascular condition?
Yeah, so if you look at individuals who are overweight or obese, the standard method is what's called the body mass index, or BMI.
Right.
Generally, the thing that you want to know is not only what the person's weight and height is, but also their body fat. So a muscular weightlifter may have a very high BMI, but have little body fat and does not have the risk that we're going to be talking about. But if you really think about how to identify it, it's actually fairly simple. And you look at the waist circumference. If men have waist circumferences above 36 inches or maybe 38, women above 34 or so, that demonstrates that they are storing their fat in their gut, in their belly.
Okay.
Belly fat is much more damaging and much more likely to cause obesity-related problems than fat that's in your buttocks or in your thighs. So we're typically talking about people who are 40, 50 pounds or more overweight with a large amount of abdominal fat, and that leads to a range of different ways that individuals can get ill from that obesity. The major way is what we call inflammation. The fat cells and the chemicals they make produce inflammation in various parts of the body that can cause destruction, whether it's in the cardiovascular system, the heart system, the joint system, etc. The other way is a simple wear and tear. Your back injury, your back pain, your knee pain is much harder, much lot more likely to happen if you're walking around weighing 250 pounds and you're 5'7" than if you're weighing 200 pounds. So it turns out, though, the good news is that to lower your risk, if you can lose even 5 or 7% of your body weight, so if you weigh 300 pounds and you lose 21 pounds, you've lowered your risk, for example, of getting diabetes.
Wow.
Now, obviously, you still weigh 200 and some odd pounds, 279 pounds. You need to lose more. But even 5 to 7% of someone's body weight reduction can make a major impact in their existing conditions and their risk for other conditions.
That's interesting. Just one quick question that I've always wondered about, and I know a lot of people may be thinking about this. You talked about, you know, we've all heard about inflammation and detoxification, things like that are some of the common causes of these chronic diseases. In the cardiovascular system, Dr. Kaufman, and the inflammation aspect from a cellular level, what is happening there that's causing that breakdown?
Well, it's not a simple process. It's the sum of a number of things. But I think the best way to think of it is that inflammation, the chemicals that are released by the body to try to overcome that inflammation, or the chemicals that are causing the inflammation, cause damage to the very, very small blood vessels.
Okay.
So imagine the vessels in your heart or in your muscles. And those vessels might be able, for a time, to be able to figure out a way to bypass the area that is inflamed or blocked. But over time, they can't.
Okay.
And each part of our body needs that blood to be able to bring oxygen and to take away waste products.
Right.
And when that doesn't happen, you start getting, depending on which organ it is, a range of different challenges or problems.
Got it. Now let's move over to some of the things you brought up, which I think is very, very interesting. You talked about the social determinants of health. Could you help us understand, like, what does that mean and what does that include in the behaviors that, you know, people have?
Yeah, so what we know from the early 40s and early 50s was that where somebody lives, what kind of environment they live in, both the ecological environment, the personal environment, the stress environment, can have a profound impact on their health. We know that one of the simple markers at a population level is how much education someone's had could predict what kind of health problems they will have, where they live, what zip code they live in, because you can look and see do they have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. Do they live in what's called a food desert, where there is very hard to get food? Or another way to think of it is that the healthy food is much more expensive than the less healthy, perhaps even subsidized food. Are they able to get physical activity? But also questions of racism, of discrimination, of prejudice. There's a whole series of things that can impact on an individual's life based on where they live, what their background has been, what they've been exposed to. We know that If you're able to modify those social determinants of health, for example, move out of the neighborhood into a neighborhood that is more stable, less violent, better access to food, fresh fruits and vegetables, healthy foods, exercise, less stress, that simply changes your risk. But we also know that if we're able to do that within a particular community by building on community empowerment, building neighborhoods that are more supportive, giving people a chance to have family and friends interactions, et cetera, that you can make a difference. We also know that depending on where you live and the things around you, it may be harder or easier for you to adopt a healthy behavior. We all know how hard it is to change behaviors. But if the world around you is conspiring, so to speak, even if it's not an active conspiracy, but is not allowing you to have the healthy choice be the easy choice, that you have temptations that we all have. We as human animals are addicted to sugar, salt, fat, and inactivity. It's what helped us survive famine over, you know, decades, over millennia, that we were able to survive the fact that we didn't have any food. And we held on to every ounce of sugar, salt, and fat. So even genetically, even with your own body chemistry, some people are more efficient at holding on to every ounce of sugar, salt, and fat and storing it for that time when they're going to be in famine, their ancestors were in famine, or the people who came across from Africa on the Middle Passage, if they didn't hold on to salt, they would die because they'd become dehydrated. So those parts of your body colliding with an obesogenic environment, if you want to use that as the best example, or an environment in which tobacco or, say, unclean water or unclean air is occurring, makes it so that you're more likely to be at risk. And then if you compound that with the healthy choice is not the easy choice because of finances, because of access, the sum of all of those things leads to just a burgeoning of these chronic illnesses, particularly over the last 50, 60 years.
And that's the million-dollar question I'm going to ask Dr. Koff when we get back, because those are, you know, the salt, fat, and sugar, and how do you overcome these behaviors? I'm assuming they've done a lot of work, and at Canary Health they have some answers on that. When we come back, we will get that answered by Dr. Kaufman. With that, I'm Pete. This is Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's News and Seattle's Talk. All right, we are back. This is People Don't Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's News, Seattle's Talk. Lauren, you learning some stuff over there?
I am learning many things, like butt fat is good fat, which is good to know.
Butt fat is good. Do you ever hear that one, Neil?
Yeah.
And Sir Mix-a-Lot agrees, certainly.
Oh, my goodness. All right, well, hey, I never knew that, but I guess now I do. All right, we're going to move on to our discussion here with Dr. Kaufman. Guys, if you want to check them out, and we're getting into some of how can Canary Health actually help with their program to overcome some of these behaviors? We're going to talk about that in this segment as well. But you want to go check them out at Canary Health, so it's canaryhealth.com, or if you have a specific question for Dr. Kaufman, it is Ann is in Nancy Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, at canaryhealth.com. And he will answer your questions for you there and see if this program that they have is right for you. All right, so going back for the previous segment when I ended, this is the thing that I always wonder about because, you know, if you look out, I don't know, it was a while ago, Dr. Kaufman, I did just a quick Google search on all of the books on diet, and there's like over 63,000 of them. Yet we have this chronic obesity problem in this country. So it is not for lack of education. It is for lack of, it seems to me, for change of behavior. So can you help address this? Because, you know, we talk about eating healthy fruits and vegetables, drinking water, yet people still eat a bunch of processed food full of sugar, fat, and salt. And it doesn't seem like we're really moving the needle all that much. So can you help us understand how you guys work with the behavioral aspect?
Sure. So I think the first premise is, how do you improve someone's confidence and competence that they can accomplish their goal? All too often, individuals, let's just think of someone 50 years old, 60 years old, has had a lifelong pattern of being poorly fit and then fit, maybe thin and heavy, maybe they gain weight a little bit each year gradually. But most people have recognized and tried things over the years that didn't seem to work. And the question becomes, how do you help someone to understand what needs to be done, which, as you said, people kind of know that, but how do you get them to actually feel that they can accomplish something? So the psychological term for that is called self-efficacy, a whole 50-year theory of how to help people get self-efficacy. But at its core, it helps. The approach is to help that individual decide what's important for him or her, for her, set a goal that's doable, a little bit of a stretch goal, but not one that is so hard I'll never do it, but not so easy that I know I can do it, and then see if in a week you're able to accomplish that. And as you accomplish these little goals, even if they have nothing to do with your challenge, what's in this case we're talking about obesity, but whatever it might be, that lessening of depression, lessening of discouragement, increasing capacity and confidence to accomplish your goals really makes a huge difference. And what we find is there also has to be a couple other things that make that easier. Your doctor, your nurse, generally are not going to be that helpful in helping you to understand at a psychological and emotional level what you might want to do with your life and why it's important to you. But your peers can, your loved ones, your peers and others. So getting and giving support from peers is critical. But the other issue that everyone needs to be thinking about is, what's the actionable moment? What is the time when something has happened? For example, you get diagnosed with diabetes or heart disease, or someone you know had a complication. But let me just how hard it is to, and think about how hard it is in your own life trying to change a behavior, even something as simple as sleeping on the different side of the bed, how long it takes you to not walk to the side of the bed. But I'll tell you my story. I'm 69 years old. 25 years ago, I was told I had a hearing loss. Turned out to be in the frequency of a woman's spoken voice, my wife's. And for 25 years, I'd say, huh? I could hear her, but I just couldn't hear her well enough.
And it wasn't selective hearing then.
And it wasn't selective, as most, I had the doctor's note.
Yeah, okay.
And it got a little bit worse over time, but it was manageable, and most of the time I could do everything I wanted to. It was a little hard in restaurants. Now, 2 years ago, I'm standing in my house, and my daughter-in-law comes to me and says, "Put her down!" And I said, "Huh?" I was holding my then 3-year-old granddaughter over my back. Okay. "Put her down!" I said, "Why should I do that?" She goes, "'Cause she asked you to." And I hadn't heard her.
Wow.
I quickly jumped to 10 years from now or 2 years from now, my daughter-in-law thinking I'm senile, I can't take care of my granddaughter, I can't be with her. Next day, I got a hearing aid.
Got it.
20 years of hearing it from my wife, hearing a single line from my daughter-in-law about my grandchild changed my life.
Yeah.
We all have those moments. The question is, do we act on them? Do we understand that I wanted to be able to hear my granddaughter? Somebody else may want to get to their child's graduation or wedding or their or whatever it might be. So helping people to see what's important in their life, what matters to them, can make all the difference in getting them to overcome the barriers that they have to changing their behavior.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense to me. And everybody, including myself, we've had these actionable moments. But the key thing is, you can have the actionable moment, but then how do you stick with something to actually create a habit and change a behavior? And then how are you guys doing that at Canary Health with your virtual program?
Sure. So I think that the guiding rules are that you start small. You don't try to run a marathon or even a 5K if you can't walk, you know, a mile. You do something that's doable, that's a little bit of a stretch, that's getting you towards your goal, and then you monitor it. Now, you could do that with friends and family and keep track, and there's lots of different trackers. Those are tools that help you to do something. They don't get you to do them, but you could do that. But the small and steady, a little bit at a time. The way we do it is there's a program that was created over 30 years ago at Stanford that brought together in-person peers, So 10 or 15 people who had the same chronic illness or had similar chronic illnesses with two peer facilitators who also had chronic illness and had gone through the program and were taught how to facilitate a group of 15 people who then learn about the core elements of self-management support, learn about how to reframe their pain, learn how to define better relations with their family and friends and coworkers, and working with their doctor and overcoming their barriers and getting the help that they need. And those individuals got to get together for 2.5 hours a week for 6 weeks in person. That's the gold standard. It's been used throughout the world, translated into 17 different languages. 11 years ago, Stanford built a digital version, and 3 years ago, we got the exclusive rights to that version, those digital programs, after they had demonstrated that it works. And fundamentally, people, through their health plan, through the healthcare provider organization, or through the employer, the program is paid for them. We don't go direct to consumer. We could, but we've chosen not to. We go through a plan, a provider, or an employer who pays because they want their employee, patient, member to be healthier. They want them to use less healthcare resources. They want them to be satisfied with the services they get. And we then enroll them into our program that's provided digitally.
Okay.
So 20 or 30 people come together for 6 weeks, an hour and a half to 2 hours a week, in 10 to 20 minute time periods. They come on whenever they want to. They hear some content. They post a question. The question might be, I know my wife loves me, but she nags me all the time about my diet. Yeah. How can I work better with my wife?
So hold on.
I've never told anybody at work.
Dr. Kaufman, I hate to interrupt you, but we got to cut for a break here. When we come back, I want to go through this step by step on what do you do in the digital program so they can really understand this. Because, guys, here's the thing. Maybe canaryhealth.com is the foundation and the process that you need that can actually make a change in your life. If you're sitting there thinking, boy, you know, I have this disease or I am overweight and I've tried everything and I just can't seem to do it on my own, this might be your solution. So with that, I'm Pete. This is Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's news and Seattle's talk. All right, we are back. This is Pete with Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's news, Seattle's talk. Before I ask this question, I want to make sure you get a piece of paper and a pencil because you're going to want to write this down at the end of the show on how to get in touch with Dr. Kaufman through email. And then also I'm going to give you the website address one more time. I think, you know, I took a look at their website and now talking to Dr. Kaufman some more, I think they're really onto something very big here that possibly could help you. So let's go back, Dr. Kaufman, to really, okay, you have something here based on the exclusive rights from the Stanford system. Can you really now put it into words and walk us through step by step, how does your online digital system actually work to help change people's behavior so they, from the actionable moment, that they actually can consistently get results?
Sure. Once a person enrolls in the program, they start a workshop usually within 1 or 2 weeks. So let's just say every Monday a new workshop begins. There's 25 people who have joined that workshop, all digitally. They come from around the country. They have different chronic illnesses. They may have one or more. They have at least one. That's how they got to be eligible for the program. And they're put into the program and spend about an hour and a half a week for 6 weeks. They do the time in 10 to 20 or 30 minute aliquots. They don't come on at the same time, but they come on whenever they want to, 24/7. And they first start out and read content that has been transformed from the conversations that happen in the in-person program about self-management. So think of them as the lesson, 15 to 20 minutes of reading each week for 6 weeks that talk about self-management support, pain management, pain, reframing symptoms, working with your healthcare provider, working with your loved ones, improving your mental fitness, your mental health, a whole series of topics. Mm-hmm. And then the real exciting part of what happens is that they then have the opportunity to give and receive support from their peers. There are two peer facilitators who facilitate the program, help move things along. And basically, there's a discussion center where an individual would post a question or concern. So, for example, I know my wife loves me, but she nags me all the time about my diet. How can I work better with my wife? Or, no one at work knows I have diabetes, and it worries me. maybe I'll have a low blood sugar, or whatever the question might be. And then they go away, and they come back in a day or two, and three or four other people have commented on that question, and maybe the person has commented on someone else's question, and they post a new question, and they go back and forth over the first week, let's say, and they participate in these conversations and these threads, getting peer support. The facilitator is there to help role model how you give support. And by the end of it, the individual is feeling better about their particular question, but they're also learning about other people's questions. They're also taught how to create an action plan. So an action plan is the term for a very simple goal. Today I am going to walk back and forth to my village that's near my home, and it'll be a half a mile. And maybe that's a stretch, because normally I can only walk a quarter of a mile, but it's not 10 miles, because I'll never accomplish that.
Yeah.
So you come up with a very concrete goal. It may be, I want to learn three words in my native Alaskan tongue so I can talk to my grandmother. And that was an action plan someone made in one of our groups.
Okay.
And the reason that was important to her is she was feeling disconnected. But the reason it was important to the program is it gave her the sense of competence and confidence that she could accomplish a goal. And by 3 or 4 weeks, she'd taken care of a number of those goals, felt better about herself, and began looking at what you and I might have called a health-related activity. You do that for 6 weeks, you're done. There is an alumni community where you can continue on if you want to, but the six-week program has demonstrated that people feel better about themselves, they lower their depression rate, they have better doctor-patient communication, they improve their pain, they improve their conditions, and for example, a study just recently was published, one of the largest ones ever for something like this. Over 1,000 people using the digital program were able to demonstrate improvement in all the diabetes care-related measures like average blood sugar, et cetera, but also a cost saving of a significant amount to the health system that was paying for it.
That's great. Well, Dr. Neal, one of the things I have a question about, though, so they have this virtual coach or virtual facilitator, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and so if they're, because does the virtual coach, do they participate in helping each individual come up with maybe their first actionable plan?
Yes. So the facilitator's job is a couple things. One is for safety, in case something comes up that needs to be handled right away. But the real job is to help the person succeed. So they do that by reviewing the action plan, saying, you know, you only had a 3 level of confidence out of 10. Maybe you're being too hard on yourself. Why don't you try something easier? Or if it was too confident, something harder. They help them to learn how to frame those, and then they get the response back from the participant at the end of the week how it worked out, and they comment on it. They also role model how you can give effective support that's not punitive, that's not negative, but a way to use language to support someone else. And people mimic and role model from what the coach, the facilitator has done in the group, but more importantly, with their family and friends, because they're now learning the techniques of how do I raise a difficult question with my loved one while I practice it with a stranger who's anonymous, by the way, and I'm able to get my practice in a safe environment, and then after I feel comfortable with it, I'll try it out in the real world.
So, Dr. Kaufman, though, the other question I have is what happens, and I'm sure you have this with some of the people that are in your program, where they start and then they disappear. What does your virtual facilitator reach back out to them if it's been a number of days, or how does that happen?
Yeah, so there's a number of approaches. There's an automated method. We want to be able to serve thousands of people or tens of thousands or more. So automated, if a person doesn't show up, we have a way of knowing that and sending them a message. We have, if it's embedded within a healthcare delivery system, we might involve the healthcare provider, the nurse or the doctor or educator who is partnering with us to have them perhaps, because maybe they're seeing the patient in the office. There's a lot of different approaches. We might even have a phone call to see if they're having a challenge or a question. We might put on groups where people can chat at the same time with each other or talk to each other on the phone. So we're always trying to identify what is the barrier. The future, however, is all of this digitally delivered, powered by machine learning with artificial intelligence. I know those are buzzwords, but basically what it means is that if you can identify a person's characteristics, what is important to them, how do they think, you're able to present to them the solution that makes sense for them in their own words, in their own language. And we do that now by hand, so to speak, but there are certainly ways to do that in an automated fashion.
Yeah, the world of technology is getting smarter and smarter. Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Kaufman, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. We learned a lot. You guys check them out there at canaryhealth.com. That's canaryhealth.com. You can also email Dr. Kaufman at Ann Nancy, that's Ann for Nancy, Kaufman, K-U-F-M-F-M-A-N at canaryhealth.com. And he can also help you, you know, in the Washington state. I know you guys are coming into this particular state, but he can help you with, okay, if there's something there for a program with a healthcare provider, he can get you pointed in the right direction. So thank you, Neil. Appreciate you coming on.
It's been my pleasure. Enjoy talking with you, and I hope your audience enjoyed my comments.
They certainly will. With that, I'm Pete.
And I'm Lauren.
This is Home Matters, Car Radio 97.3 FM, Seattle's News, Seattle's Talk.
Hey, it's John Curley, and I'm here with Rick Gregorick. Rick, after attending a few of your events, one of the things that really stood out to me is how proper planning can really give you and your family and loved ones peace of mind.